is the August 29th, 2014 edition of WFAE Talks. I'm Greg Collar, WFAE's news director. This week, I'm joined by Ben Bradford.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, fresh. Are you fresh from vacation? Are you tan and rested and all that? Or you
know, well, I'm about as pale as always, and I'm on Pacific time. So
still Pacific time.
Well, I'm probably like somewhere like around like Central time at the moment.
Okay,
we're moving slowly east.
All right, was it hard doing your first story this week, getting back in the group?
No, it was harder to go through like the thousand some emails that I'd missed in my week off.
You also sent us a few emails while you're off, and someone had replied. I think it's Duncan. Yeah, aren't you on vacation?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I felt like you see stuff and you want to contribute. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. thank you for promoting my work ethic.
But you were in California.
Right? I was. I was out in California. I was in San Francisco, and then I was in L.A. And as soon as I left the Bay Area, Napa had the earthquake.
Right.
So clearly, it was sorry to see me go.
All right. Well, for the second week in a row, we have Tom Bullock.
I'm confused.
Yeah.
The only reason I came in, I saw like two other guys sitting in front of a computer, and I figured it was fantasy football time. What? This is...
No, no. we thought you can add something, but no.
Tom had a big series this week.
Yes. Well, Lisa, I want to say also, you're in here the second week in a row. You're in here for Lisa Miller, who's usually here, but she is not joining us this week.
Because she has a big series next week.
Busy, yes. Finishing up a series on the cost of college tuition, and it's a little promo here, but... it's on both the rising cost to students and the decreasing but still significant amount that the state spends on higher education. She's working on that series with Michael Tomczyk, and it'll be a three-part series. The first installment airs Tuesday at 6:30 and 8:30 Tuesday morning, and it'll be going on through Thursday.
I love that kind of thing too, right? I mean, the idea of pulling out one of these big sort of sectors of our spending,
mm-hmm.
Of our economy, of our lives, and saying, okay, how does this actually factor in?
Totally.
How do these costs work? When you pay for college, when you go to college, what does that actually mean?
Mm-hmm.
How much are you paying? How does that fit into what the university is doing? And how much is the state paying? How much do you actually cost as a student?
And I mean, I have to say, we have for those people out there who haven't seen our newsroom, it's pretty small, but just listening to, Michael and Lisa talking about stuff, I'm learning a ton about things I really, and I'm not just saying that because it's going to be on our air. I mean, truly learning a ton about how much of your tuition is actually going for stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with you or your education
mm-hmm.
in any way.
Good. Well, I hope they feel some real pressure once
yes.
once they hear us talking about this.
I think they'll deliver our listeners will be happy with what they produce. Coming up, we're going to discuss the state's revised incentives program for the film industry, and it's much smaller now. That new program takes effect in January, but as a result of these changes, we're starting to see some productions leave North Carolina, and one of them being Banshee, which films in Charlotte. Producers of that program are moving all production to Louisiana, the reason being that incentives are much more generous there. We'll also discuss airport politics. But let's start things off by discussing another series that aired this week. We called it Cowell's Alternative, a reference to Treasurer Janet Cowell's decision to invest state pension money in what are called alternative investments. And Tom, one of the interesting aspects of this series is that lots of people with ties to Wall Street investment firms that make money off alternative investments really like to give campaign contributions to Treasurer Cowell.
They really do. I mean, I was amazed when I was looking at the numbers. I think one of the ones that's most telling to me is the fact that if you go through the Follow the Money database, and you can find links to this on our website on these stories, if you sort by city for 2012 and for any of her elections once she was treasurer, so it's 2008 and 2012, Raleigh is normally number one. New York City is normally number two in terms of total numbers given. It's pretty astounding. And it makes a lot of sense if you look at the way that the state's pension system is set up. North Carolina is one of only four states, and this is still pretty amazing to me, where the final say on big pension decisions, where to invest, who to invest with, what kind of investments to make, they're not done by a board where you would have, say, representatives of the retired people that the pension is serving, investment professionals, the treasurer, or the governor, or anything like that. It's really done by one person. And in North Carolina, that's Janet Cowell. And the only other states that have that system are New York, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. Rhode Island is already having a lot of questions asked about its alternative investments. New York has had a ton of pension issues in terms of pay-to-play schemes. In fact, the Securities and Exchange Commission changed the way that, you know, investment advisors or people in the financial industry can give money to candidates because of this a scandal, a pay-to-play scandal in New York, set up basically in the same way that we're set up here. And, you know, Connecticut, it's pretty.
Well, and when you're talking about alternative investments, you're talking about not just investing in stocks and bonds. It's actually investing in hedge funds or other kinds of funds, or even like I think CDOs and other kinds of financial products.
All sorts of stuff.
And they come with the people who manage them, who then the fund pays to manage them, charge much higher fees. I think you said that in some cases how much higher can they be?
The reality of it is we don't know exactly what the fees are, because there's another interesting thing about North Carolina, which is the North Carolina trade secret clause basically allowed these companies, these financial firms, to keep everything secret. And when we say secret, even with a public records request, they are banned from ever being made public as the law stands now. So fee structure, where the money's going, what it's invested in, who's managing the money, all of that is completely off limits to the public, even though it's a public pension system. And it's not just standard kind of financial things that the pension system is investing in. It's also commodities. I mean, this is one thing I didn't get into specifically in the series, but I'm fascinated by the fact that, you know, for teachers and state troopers and government employees, state government employees who are in the system, Treasurer Cowell has 1.5 million barrels of oil, thousands of bushels of wheat and cotton. That's not an investment, according to every single investment advisor that I spoke with. It's a bet. You're betting on a commodity to go up or down. You're not taking possession. You're not actually trading it on the open market. You're basically buying a future, the right to it, and then trying to sell it at a profit or loss.
Now, these alternative investments have had a fair return so far when they actually increased our stake in them.
And that's right? The reason for doing them, right, is the rationale is, oh, well, these guys have higher rates of return.
Well, that's the rationale. Mm-hmm. And they had a good rate of return this year. They were well under stocks. I think the return, if I remember right, this year is a little over, I think it was 17.44%. Stocks this year made 26% for the pension. But if you go back 10 years, and 10 years is a really good benchmark for these, because in the case of private equity and hedge funds, you're often locked in for long-term contracts, specifically with private equity, that can often be 7 to 10 years. So if you go back to 10 years, the return is about 6.7%. It's a little bit higher than bonds, but it's really not that great. And that number, 6.7%, to give you an idea of what the pension fund needs overall, there's a magic number they have to meet in order every year in order to be able to pay off everything that they've promised. And that's about, you know, it's about 7.25%. So it's well below that. It's well below, you know, what you would expect with for an investment class when the treasurer is moving tons of money in to it, hoping basically that it's going to pay off. And others, in fact, the largest pension system in the country, one of the largest in the world, CalPERS, said, we've looked at this for 22 years. We've done it for 22 years. The returns aren't worth the fees. And right now they're definitely poised to cut by at least 50%, if not completely jump out of alternatives.
CalPERS is the California retirement system.
That's correct.
Yeah, for public employees. Yeah.
So, well, very good job. Interesting stuff. Aired Monday and Tuesday this week, and it is, of course, available on our website. On to the next topic, airport politics. Ben came back from vacation, and one of the first things you did was get a report that the city had commissioned to review.
I was actually on my way back from the airport. I was in Atlanta on a layover, waiting to come back to Charlotte. I get this message from the city's communications director saying, hey, we have some information coming out, and we're going to embargo it, which means that basically they will agree to show it to us. It's kind of a strange press thing, but basically they agree to show it to us on the condition that we don't release it until a set time when they're going to release it publicly. And they offer me a half-hour slot talking to the city's aviation director, just one-on-one. And they're only going to do this with four journalists. And then they're going to do a big rollout of this report that's coming out. Again, not really clear on what the details of these reports are, but just that, you know, it has something to do with management of the airport. And, of course, we know that there's this whole backstory to the management of the airport, which is that there's a big fight between state lawmakers and city officials over who should run it. We know that the longtime aviation director, Jerry Orr, who's widely credited with sort of transforming Charlotte Douglas into the international airport, to the nation's sixth largest airport that it is today. We know that he lost his job in the course of this fight and all those kind of things. So we have no idea what this report is, right? And there's this big buildup.
And the city paid a couple $100,000 for this report, right?
Yes. And yeah. So, but we didn't know what it was. I didn't know it was those particular reports. We knew the city had commissioned some financial reports and so forth. So then it comes out, and really it's not... It's kind of boring. It's a little boring. It's a little technical. It's a little dry. And essentially what they are is they're these reports. And yes, I did a public records request for them a while ago, a number of months ago. Basically, it's called a turnover report. There actually were four reports, but they were looking at, okay, what is the state of the airport? How is it, you know, how is it managed? It's essentially an accounting firm looking at it. And then there was an employment firm looking at how much are we paying people at the airport. And then there was like an internal review of some of these leases for, you know, how the city's animal control shelter pays rent to the airport because they rent airport land. That's really what these things were about. So not really ground shaking. So then we're kind of scratching our heads. We're like, all right, well, why is there all this buildup over it? You know, what does it mean? But I think that if you look at the larger context, it becomes a little bit more interesting. First of all, the reports, what they basically show is some shoddy paperwork at the airport. Mm-hmm. That's really kind of the bottom line of these of the accounting reports, basically saying, well, listen, there's one dedicated employee managing over 200 contracts or around 200 contracts for people selling, you know, for everybody in Charlotte, whether it's the construction workers or the airlines or the shops that you buy in.
So why the big rollout for stuff like that? I mean, why are they trying to make this big public unveil?
Sure.
I mean,
so that's what we're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to figure out. And I think that there are really two, you know, reasons. The first one is, thus far the city and the airport have both kind of denied this particular reason. But if state lawmakers are trying to strip control of Charlotte Douglas from the city council by saying that they are concerned about political influences and the city council potentially wanting to raid the airport's enormous budget and the revenue that it generates for city purposes. These were some of the kind of allegations that were kind of floating out there for why a commission might be necessary, or the city council's meddling and we don't want politics meddling in the airport. The report really shows that's really not happening. Now, the report does not, the people doing it were not looking at fraud, but the city has been pushing out no fraud was found in these reports. So I think that indicates part of that. That's part one. The second thing is that we're seeing, like I said, there's Jerry Orr was the aviation director for a very long time. He was with the airport for at least a couple of decades. I don't have the exact figure right off the top of my head. But he was there for a very long time, and his entire thing was low cost because Charlotte is the lowest cost airport for airplanes, for airlines to fly out of. They're what's called cost per emplanement is significantly lower than any of the other top largest airports in the nation. The other thing that's happened is that since Jerry Orr was sort of ousted in the course of this fight, and the new interim aviation director, Brent Cagle, has come on, he's pushed for more spending. And so when you have an airport which is widely considered to be very successful and widely considered to be low cost, and for that to be the reason for its success and the reason that a relatively small place like Charlotte can garner a huge amount of air traffic is because of the cost. You know, airlines are flying through its connections and so forth. So he's really got to make a case for if we're going to start spending more at the airport, why would we do that? I think that really, in terms of the politics, this is a really long-winded way of explaining a complicated thing. But really, it's simple at the end of it, which is I think that this is ammunition to say, hey, we need to spend. We need to do things my way, and we need to do it a different way. We've seen Jerry Orr had a very strong legacy when he left. And we saw support. The airlines are doing a pretty delicate dance over what they think about the politics of it. But we saw some very strong support and some for Jerry Orr, and I think that we've seen some of the city officials kind of cast some doubts on his legacy. There were some questions about some bonds or some loans that the city had taken out, or that the airport had taken out to build some parking lots, and they'd we've seen some things about the buses being really torn up and dysfunctional, and them not having enough of them, and these have sort of been pushed back on to I think in some ways pushed back on to Jerry Orr, and I think that this report can be seen to be doing the same.
I think the average person hearing this will want to know, what's this mean for me? Does this mean I'm going to be paying more for flights, for parking?
Well, you already are paying more for parking, right? I mean, we saw one of the first things that happened this year was that the airport raised its parking rates. And it's basically the what they said was that they were too low, that they're, you know, incredibly low, that they're still low even after raising them. You know, $5 to park in the long-term lot is what it was. Now I think it's $7. But you basically saw, I mean, across the parking spectrum, whether it's, you know, valet or long-term or short-term or business or whatever, rates went up almost 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think we are seeing that. And part of that is that delicate dance is, if you want to spend more at the airport, where does that cost come from? And, you know, Brent Cagle had said to me, I asked him about this, sort of this idea of spending more, and he had a pretty strong answer, which is, he said, you know, I think that there's this idea out there that you can't spend more and get the airlines on board that they're going to leave. He didn't quite say leave, he cut himself off. And he said, that's not how it has to be. They're actually on board with our current spending plan.
Well, but they get a portion of the receipts for airport parking.
That's so right. When you pay for parking, the airlines get part of it.
On to the next topic, Banshee. Tom, you wrote a produced story this week about the producers of Banshee closing up shop in Charlotte and heading out for New Orleans.
Yeah, it seems pretty clear that this is the first true casualty of North Carolina changing its film incentive program. And HBO, which produces the show, still won't say anything in particular about it being an official move, but... You know, these days you find out a surprising amount from Twitter, and on Twitter, cast members, crew members, all sorts of people were saying, hey, Charlotte, thanks for being our home for the last, you know, for basically all of their entire existence, three seasons. You've been wonderful. Thanks. Bye-bye. And I started digging around and found the Louisiana state government website that's basically their film office, and they are happy to post that Banshee is doing pre-production work in 2014, which would be... right now.
So the state's revamped tax credit program for film production basically caps the amount of credits for the whole state at $10 million starting next year.
Yeah, starting January 1st.
That's a huge change.
And last year was Banshee alone was $16 million, received $16 million in credits.
That's exactly right. And it's the way that works is really funny. The old system, the current system, the one that even Tom Tillis got down on the House floor and did a pretty... you know, impassioned speech, and rather unusual since as Speaker of the House, he normally doesn't do floor debates. He basically went down there and said, towards the end of the never-ending short session, if we don't keep this going, he was pushing to continue the tax credit program at least for another year. If we don't keep this going, you're going to start seeing these things leave, these productions leave. And I have a feeling that when we come back in January, you know, people are going to start wondering, do we need to change this? And, you know, the way that it worked, that it still works until the end of the year, is for every dollar that a qualifying television show or movie or some documentaries, every dollar they spend in state, they get a quarter back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that overall amount is capped at $20 million per production. And the only thing that I've been able to find that actually hit that cap was when Iron Man was...
That's right. Iron Man 3 was at least up and through last year the only one that had ever gotten that far.
And then, so now they go to this grant program, which, as you said, is capped overall for every production in the state at $10 million. And as you pointed out, too, Banshee would have blown through that and then some. And it's also funny, too, because I was talking to some film folks about this, and the other problem with the grant program is the tax incentive program they have right now is guaranteed and predictable, right? If you spend a dollar and it's qualifying and the state auditors say, hey, that's all good, you get a quarter back. So, you know, if you spend $1 million, you're going to get $250,000 back. With a grant program, you have to spend, if you're a production company, you have to pay $1,000 to apply to get the grant, which is how they fund it. And then you hope that you get some chunk of that $10 million, but there's no guarantee. You don't, you know, it's up to a selection committee. 25% for North Carolina sounds very generous. It is. There's no doubt. But in Georgia, it's 30%. In New Orleans, it's 40%. And this week, another tweet that I thought was rather telling was when Arnold Schwarzenegger, did you see this? Arnold Schwarzenegger, that Arnold, you know, Schwarzenegger, congratulated Jerry Brown and the California governor or the California, you know, lawmakers for passing their own film incentive program, because that's what it takes now for these productions to set up shop anywhere.
And that's one of the criticisms in general of getting into it. So it's not a surprise that we're already seeing folks picking up shop and heading out of town. Like I think that it was pretty well understood that once North Carolina cut its film incentives program, I mean, beyond just beyond the kind of complications that you just described, Tom, it's not a surprise that once that amount that they could get back was cut, that they were going somewhere else. The question has been, do you offer these extremely generous packages, which are very different from essentially any other incentives that the state offers? When you think about something like Chiquita mm-hmm. coming here, for instance, which is now, you know, looks like leaving to go to Ireland. Mm. But when you look at something like that, essentially what they do is they say, all right, you get a certain amount back on your taxes. And that's if you hit a certain job target and you put a certain amount of investment into the economy. Mm-hmm. And for film, they don't do that. For film, it is, just like Tom said, you get a quarterback of every dollar. It doesn't have to do with how much you pay in taxes. There's actually a subsidy where you get paid a certain amount back based off of how much you spend mm-hmm. up to that $20 million limit. So it's very different. And the argument, and there are arguments on both sides, you know, the film industry says, well, listen, we do so much for the economy. Think about not just what we're spending, but think about the
ripple effects.
The guy selling lumber mm-hmm. who now sells, you know, 80% of his lumber to the industry for sets. Mm-hmm. You know, think about the money that he's making, or the local malls that are selling props and all those different kinds of things. And you know, and then if you look at it that way, then you know, you see numbers like $1 billion over the last 5 years, things like that, which far outweigh. But essentially, that was the debate. So,
actor salaries are included in this too.
Actor salaries,
qualified actor salary. There are caps. Mm-hmm. So, like going back to Iron Man,
right? Downey paid, I think it was $1 million is the cap.
Yeah, $1 million of his salary, and he got, you know, Hollywood star money.
That's right.
But $1 million of his salary was all it could go towards it. So yeah, Ben's right. I mean, some of it is it's spent here, but it's not necessarily money that goes directly into
right.
the economy.
So there's this question about. Essentially, the question that states are facing, and California is one of them, because of course, you know, they are home to the film industry, but there's a smaller and smaller amount of filming that's actually done in California. I mean, you get the studios are based in Los Angeles, but they want to come out to a place like, you know, previously North Carolina, set up an LLC so that they can essentially shift the money back to the studios while paying, a small amount as possible in taxes. So there's a question about essentially getting involved in what some people see as a race to the bottom mm-hmm. in terms of offering these incentives.
There's a lot of debate over how much of a direct economic impact this will have, and it will have one. There's no doubt that it will have one, because you are talking about huge sums of money. I just want to make sure, just to clarify, it's, you know, in some ways it would be easy to see this as almost like, you know, Burger King buying Tim Hortons kind of inversion tax, blah, blah, blah. But it actually still brings a lot of money to the state. And actually, you heard that with lawmakers, even on the floor, Republican lawmakers. Some of it is debatable, there's no doubt, but there is an actual pretty significant, could be as many as just 4,000 plus jobs in the industry itself that disappear in the state.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of money that actually does go into local economies. And it's really up to people to decide if it's worth it or not.
Right, exactly. And do we have a sense of, now that the state is going to be saving this money and not paying it out to the film industry, do we have a sense of where that money's going?
No, and you know, there's another question that I kept asking when we were doing the series. I kept asking, trying to get an answer from, you know, the General Assembly or their kind of financial arm and, you know, all that kind of stuff. What is it, the Fiscal Research Division? Never got answers back, but you would assume that the money stays in the general fund, because that's exactly where
that's
it was
where,
coming from.
That's where it's paid from, yeah.
But the general fund is an amalgam of tax money, mm-hmm. including sales tax, including income tax, including, you know, these are things that will take a hit from a lack of a movie industry in North Carolina, because, you know, they still paid taxes. The crew that was based here still paid taxes, and everything they bought, whether it was a concession, you know, Diet Coke, or whether it was the lumber you were talking about, they paid sales tax on. So I'm also very curious to see if this shrinks as dramatically as some people say that it is, what kind of a hit is that going to take on the actual income of the general fund?
You know, but, well, that actually should, at least in terms of direct spending, you're right, we can't, you know, you can measure the economic impact of indirect spending. And that's where you see these figures of like $1 billion over 5 years, I think is what it was, that the North Carolina Film Office was saying. The North Carolina Film Office, which is, you know, sort of a booster from the film industry here, their job is to attract film here. And if you go to the, you know, to the North Carolina Commerce site where they're on there, you can see their whole packages, you know, kind of touting the incentives and saying come here and all those kind of things. And they even are very upfront when Julie Rose was doing her story last year on the film incentives, former reporter here, Julie Rose. They actually told her it was sort of a back of the napkin projection, but there was no question that the taxes coming in from the film industry were less than the amount that we were paying out in incentives. Mm-hmm. So the general fund in that sense should be higher.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
All right. So now if you want, we're going to lose a certain amount of these film jobs, maybe most of these film jobs. Well, what are you going to replace it with? Is there a better bang for your buck incentive?
I'm curious. This is our own little film experiment, I think, economic experiment that's going on here. I'm curious to see what ends up happening because Ben and I are slightly different on this. I think there's no doubt that if you do strictly what the production companies paid out versus strictly what they get back in, the general fund does take a hit to that. But I think when you look at the broader context of that ripple effect, so you don't just look at the direct film jobs, you look at the lumber guys.
Sure.
I think that given the fact that you're going to end up having a wider, I think it would be a wider economic hit.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you.
Ben Bradford, Tom Bullock.